Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and we're going to continue with our series, Specialized Knowledge and Abilities. In our last segment, we examined the murders of two black people, allegedly committed by some active-duty soldiers with the 82nd Airborne Division at Fort Bragg in North Carolina, and we discussed the possibility that the killings may have been committed to avenge or to commemorate the shooting death of a neo-Nazi named Jay Matthews in 1984. The killings took place on the anniversary of his death. The killings may also have been intended to score points for one of the members who was talking about earning his, quote, spiderweb tattoo. According to people knowledgeable about some of the ways of various white supremacist groups, that spiderweb tattoo can, although doesn't necessarily indicate that one has killed for one's cause. In the San Francisco Examiner of Monday, December 11th of 1995, there's an AP story headlined, Army and FBI on Hunt for Racists, subheaded Fort Bragg under investigation after soldiers allegedly killed black couple. This is datelined Fayetteville, North Carolina. And the last paragraph is going to provide us with a transition to the subject of this particular segment, a potentially very destructive and certainly frightening institution called the Special Forces Underground. This article describes that, saying, the New York Times reported Monday that a group on base, by the way, interrupting, that base is Fort Bragg, North Carolina. The New York Times reported Monday that a group on base that calls itself the, quote, Special Forces Underground, unquote, publishes a newsletter called The Resister, which espouses individual rights and, quote, republicanism, unquote, and denounces, quote, liberalism, tribalism, and internationalism, unquote. What we're going to take a look at now is some reportage from various publications about this Special Forces Underground, an institution that has yet to be properly pinned down and identified. Their rhetoric, however, as some have noted, is very similar to the rhetoric of some of the Christian militias that have come into the public's viewpoint after the Oklahoma City bombing. We're going to turn next to the New York Times of Friday, December 15th of 1995. There's a long article in this particular edition of the New York Times about the Special Forces Underground. It's entitled, Extremist Army Group Wages War with U.S. Policy. The article is authored by John Kiffner, K-I-F-N-E-R, and subheaded, From a Shadow Group, Words of Dissent Startling in Their Vehemence. And this deals with, again, a Special Forces Underground, and I think that term can be taken quite literally. This is a group within the Special Forces, the famed and very formidable Green Beret of the United States Army, that is opposed to not only the specific policies of President Clinton, but that would appear to be opposed to the notion of democracy itself, and whose rhetoric, as I've indicated, is very similar to that of many of the Christian militias, and apparently one issue of their magazine, The Resister, contains an offer to train some of the militias. This article begins, and again from the New York Times of Friday, 12/15/95, an underground group claiming to be serving in the Army's elite special forces headquartered at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, has been publishing a far-right dissident newsletter that is virulently critical of the federal government, and particularly of its use of soldiers in carrying out foreign policy for more than a year. Called The Resister, the publication, for example, was vehemently opposed to American military involvement in Haiti, which it said was installing a communist ruler at the behest of, quote, racists, unquote, and, quote, tribalists, unquote, in the Congressional Black Caucus. And, citing what it said were accounts by its adherents among Green Berets sent to Haiti, the newsletter asserted that some Special Forces soldiers were subverting American policy by telling supporters of the ousted military junta how to hide their weapons and themselves, and identifying supporters of the restored President Jean-Bertrand Aristide for future retribution. It is not known how large the group is, or even the extent to which its publication circulates, but the Special Forces acknowledge its existence. Lieutenant Colonel Kenneth McGraw, capital M-C, capital G-R-A-W, the spokesman for the Special Operations Command at Fort Bragg, said several checks of the group by the military authorities indicated that they were not in violation of any regulations. Skipping down, the possible existence of a right-wing underground within the Special Forces represents more difficult issues, for it is these highly trained and skilled unconventional warfare units that are the Army's cutting edge in deploying troops in brushfire wars, Third World flare-ups, and the bitter nationalist conflicts unleashed by the end of the Cold War. The ideas typical of the newsletter, quote, are basically the white Christian militia mentality, unquote, said Michael Reynolds, who has been tracking the group known as the Special Forces Underground for the Southern Poverty Law Center, quote, but you've just ratcheted up from a pickup basketball game to the NBA, unquote, he said, again quoting, this is very dangerous. These are individuals trained in insurgency warfare, and they are the best in the world. They have access to weaponry, and if they become more involved with underground paramilitary extremists, this is a very bad sign, unquote. Recall the Nazi tactic advocated by Stefan Hupka of the SRA in Germany, that Nazis and white supremacists should infiltrate the military and police in order to acquire, quote, specialized knowledge and abilities, unquote, which would then be used to systematically kill off any enemies and eventually to overthrow the very government itself from within in a fashion not unlike the way the Weimar Republic was overthrown, chiefly with the aid of the so-called Black Reichswehr, underground units of the German army, which systematically assassinated the political leadership of Weimar Germany, ranging from far left to middle of the road. This paved the way for the rise of Adolf Hitler. I think something very similar is underway in the United States and elsewhere. Continuing with this New York Times article about the Special Forces Underground. A glimpse into the tenor of the Resister publication is indicated by its reaction to the moving of a statue called Bronze Bruce, honoring Green Beret killed in Vietnam, quote, fighting the ideological source of the New World Order, the egalitarian evil of communism, unquote. The statue was moved into the Special Operations Command headquarters, which encompasses several other units, quote, he now sits in the breezeway of a building infested with internationalist quislings and politically correct milquetoasts who consider civil affairs and psychological operations, social workers, ranger infantry, and aviation prima donnas the equal of special forces soldiers and their OSS progenitors, unquote, the newsletter says. Special forces troops are deployed in 12-man A-teams, cross-trained in such specialties as engineering, explosives, weapons, and medicine, and skilled in languages. They are sent to function independently in remote areas, often with a political/military purpose, like training local soldiers or guerrillas. And skipping down. This role, apparently the role of peacekeepers, that is, talking about peacekeeping missions, this role apparently holds little appeal for the soldiers behind the resistor, who described American peacekeeping this way, quote, the U.S. military has become a slave service for the wealth redistribution schemes of internationalists and gangs of weeping do-gooder mystics. One need simply note the circling of media carrion eaters to predict in which third world toilet these virtualists with these altruists will flush hundreds of millions of U.S. tax dollars and the lives of U.S. servicemen. Peacekeeping is a monumental fraud, unquote. The coming issue of Soldier of Fortune magazine carries a not unsympathetic article on the Special Forces Underground, including an interview with the Resister's editor, who contends that the Army has begun a, quote, witch hunt, unquote, against the group, trying to drive suspected members out of the elite unit. But both the Soldier of Fortune article and Mr. Reynolds noted that the groups had used clandestine skills they had been taught in the Army to conceal themselves from the authorities. Mr. Reynolds said the publication had been available until recently on the Internet, the Computer Communications Network, and had shifted its printing and distribution center from Arlington, Texas, to Maryland, to Kansas City, Missouri, to Bloomington, Minnesota. In a description of its philosophy in its first issue in the summer of 1994, the Resister said it favored, quote, strict constitutionalism, isolationism, laissez-faire capitalism, individual rights, limited government, and republicanism, unquote, and opposed, quote, statism, liberalism, tribalism, socialism, collectivism, internationalism, democracy, altruism, poll politics, and the New World Order, unquote. With a coiled rattlesnake, a Revolutionary War symbol, on its masthead, the publication inveighs against Joint Task Force 6, which uses soldiers to help combat drug smuggling, and it warns of supposed government plots to use the Army to disarm the public. By the way, that aspect of the Special Forces Underground's outlook and philosophy I agree with. I think there is, in fact, a strong connection between the gun control movement, and I am opposed to gun control, and elements of the national security establishment and martial law contingency plans, which became public during the course of the Iran-Contra scandal. I certainly do not support most of the things that the Special Forces Underground advocates, but again, I think, as I've indicated in past broadcasts, I think gun control is a red herring, and I am personally opposed to it. Perhaps later in this series we can get into the apparent intelligence community connection to the gun control movement, but that will depend on time. There's a lot of ground to cover. However, this aspect of the Special Forces Underground's outlook I personally agree with, and I think history will bear me out. This is not to be misinterpreted as an endorsement of their entire political agenda or even most of it. Indeed, I share the concerns of some of the observers quoted here about the potential for the Special Forces Underground to literally pave the way for a right-wing slash fascist overthrow of the United States government. Continuing. Written in a combination of military jargon and intellectual references to the philosopher John Locke, its articles include both right-wing politics and military tactics. It also contains cryptic personal advertisements like, quote, "The Kings Mountain Model Railroad Club will hold its quarterly meeting at the Greensboro Address. Topic, the joys of timber trestle modeling." Or, Samuel Donaldson has 14 red peonies growing in his garden, unquote. A note in one recent issue advertised, quote, "Sniper firearms training, former Special Forces sniper instructor, selective, expensive." The first issue found its way into the reference library at the John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center and school at Fort Bragg and was confiscated in August of 1994. The publication itself, however, would only have been illegal if it had been produced on Army time or with Army equipment or Army material like any paper, an Army spokesman said. In the spring of 1995, Colonel McGraw, the Army spokesman, said all available issues were sent to the Army's staff judge advocate for review. The judge advocate ruled that the material did not violate Army guidelines or regulations, he said, and a further review indicated there was no violation of security or disclosure of classified material. Still concerned, however, the commander of Special Operations, Lieutenant General J.T. Scott, issued a policy letter telling commanders they should understand the rules governing extremist organizations, Colonel McGraw said. The general then ordered a survey of 1,111 troops in Special Operations Command to see if any participated in extremist groups. All said they did not. The Army had already ruled, however, that the, quote, underground, unquote, did not fit within the extremist guidelines. Well, those guidelines would appear to me to be somewhat technical, certainly if, in fact, the claims made in the Resister that Green Beret and Haiti were actively countering official U.S. policy. That would appear to me to be a breach of military discipline as well as something that was illegal. However, I would note some of the aspects of the stated political outlook of the Special Forces Underground. It remains to be determined just who these people are, whether they are sincere conservatives of an extreme nature or outright fascist, as I suspect many of them are, although perhaps not all of them. I do think that some of the views expressed by the Special Forces Underground, as well as their obvious capabilities, and these are not only extremely formidable individuals from a military standpoint, but they're also highly intelligent, as some of the quotes from the interview I'm about to read you indicate. And I think their official opposition to democracy is something that should be of great concern to Americans, all Americans, and indeed the Stefan Hupka tactic of infiltrating the military to acquire specialized knowledge and abilities should be borne in mind. It would be difficult to imagine any knowledge and abilities more specialized than those of the Green Beret. In that New York Times article I read, there was a reference to a forthcoming Soldier of Fortune article, and not unsympathetic article, about the Special Forces Underground. That article indeed did come out. It's from Soldier of Fortune's issue of February of 1996. The article is entitled "Witch Hunt for the Resister," subtitled "Army Special Operations Command Beats Bushes" for Maverick Magazine. It's authored by James L. Pate, P-A-T-E. Skipping down in the article, we read about an account that New York Newsday had of the Resister and the Special Forces Underground. The decidedly liberal and now defunct New York Newsday called it a, quote, "rebel guide circulating among homegrown militias that gives tips on guerrilla warfare tactics and attacks Clinton administration policies." By the way, those are followed by brackets with regard to "gives tips on guerrilla warfare tactics." They say "horrors," with an exclamation point, obviously sarcastic. And after talking about attacking Clinton administration policies, they have "heaven forbid," again followed by an exclamation point, obviously intended to underscore sarcasm. Continuing. "The Resister has been circulated to Green Beret bases and other U.S. military installations, as well as to private paramilitary organizations whose members fear what they describe as federal government plans to disarm Americans and sacrifice U.S. jobs and businesses to a new world order, unquote. And again, I would note that I think there are elements of significant truth in some of the things said by the resistor. I think one need be a member of the Special Forces Underground to recognize that multinational corporate capitalism is indeed transferring jobs and manufacturing facilities out of a modern country such as the United States and Germany, where workers demand a high standard of living and a reasonably high wage. Those businesses are being moved to third world countries in order to take advantage of the poor wage scale and lax environmental regulations. More about the Newsday account of the resistor. The Soldier of Fortune magazine and James L. Pate, its writer, go on to note, quote, "It is interesting to note that the resistor survives. New York Newsday did not. The Newsday report noted the significance of alleged Green Beret control of the resistor because the Army's approximately 6,000, quote, special forces members routinely take part in central intelligence operations overseas. They are skilled in fomenting revolutions and putting down insurgencies," unquote. And I've noted in the past that for decades, many of our most powerful institutions, elements of the military, elements of the CIA, State Department, as well as many of our most prominent corporations and industrialists and financiers, as well as political figures, have been openly and ardently pro-fascist going back to the 1920s and 30s. By the way, that has been documented amply in numerous archive shows, about which I will have more to say in a minute, or later in this segment. James L. Pate goes on to write further about the resistor. That report, speaking of the Newsday report, that report was followed 2 days later by a 30th of April broadcast of an interview of two resistor editors on the CBS News show 60 Minutes. Their faces hidden in the shadows and their voices altered to disguise their true identities, the two Green Beret fielded questions from reporter Steve Croft that demonstrated a clever evasion of entrapment and a brazen contempt for convention that are hallmarks of special forces operators. Croft: "The commander says you don't exist." Answer: "That's excellent." Croft: "How do we know you're not the only two people in this organization?" Answer: "You don't." "I do," and Pate goes on to say, "I do. They're not." No doubt the CBS interview, seen by more than 75 million people, tweaked the Army's nose out of joint. Afterward, an attempt was made by Army Special Operations technicians to, quote, demask, unquote, the altered voices by repeatedly replaying the 60 Minutes footage through highly specialized equipment. This was defeated by, quote, white noise, unquote, and other precautionary electronic countermeasures set up prior to the arrival of the 60 Minutes film crew. And skipping down, in this particular article about the Special Forces Underground and its Resistance is a European-based white supremacist magazine, in an interview with the editor of the Resistor magazine, we find the following, and this is indicative of the philosophy underlying the Special Forces Underground and the Resistor. The editor is presented here under the moniker of J.F.A. Davidson. That's his nom de plume, not his real name. And skipping down in the interview, we read, SOF refers to Special of Forces, Davidson obviously to the J.F.A. Davidson nom de plume. SOF: "Some Army spokesmen and some people on Capitol Hill have described the Resistor as an extremist publication." Davidson: "What they mean is that the resistor is anti-socialist, anti-communist, and anti-United Nations." SOF: "Some officers have said that your opposition to democracy in favor of constitutional republicanism borders on sedition." Davidson: "It helps to have historical context, not to look at this through a revisionist lens. 70 years ago, citizenship manuals issued to soldiers explicitly denounced democracy. To have advocated democracy then would have been considered seditious. The description of our government as a democracy is a myth, perpetrated and sustained by socialists and communists. There are no references to democracy in the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, or the U.S. Constitution. In all of the collected writings of the framers, both Federalist and Anti-Federalist, nowhere is democracy advocated." Soldier of Fortune: "How do you square your editorial advocacy with the Pentagon's position that the U.S. military and its members must remain apolitical?" Davidson: "The tradition of the U.S. military is that it remain non-political, not apolitical. A non-political military doesn't become involved in politics. An apolitical military isn't concerned with politics. There is an irreconcilable difference between the meaning and intent of those two terms. Whenever you hear a politician or a senior military official speak of our apolitical military, a cold chill should run down your spine, because you are listening to a fundamental bromide of impending tyranny." SOF: Is the resistor or its support group, the Special Forces Underground, involved directly or indirectly with any militia organizations? Davidson. Absolutely not. The Militia Act of 1792 and subsequent amendments explicitly prohibit soldiers in the Standing Army from any involvement with the militia. The logic and sanity of that prohibition is beyond question. SOF. Had the repercussions by the chain of command against individuals accused rightly or wrongly of ties to and support of the resistor eroded support in the ranks? Davidson. Just the opposite. Every soldier, sailor, airman, or marine who suffers the results of arbitrary action against them for supporting the only pro-constitutional voice in the military gains us supporters among his friends and associates. I noted in the Sons of Gestapo series that when a government performs any sort of crackdown to counteract extremist terror, that does tend to have the effect of stratifying and polarizing the broader population group upon whom the crackdown comes, and that is indeed the focus of the strategy of tension, to radicalize, polarize, and stratify the society as a reaction to the anti-democratic natures or steps taken by the, quote, strong state, unquote, to counteract terror. Although the leader, although the editor of the Resistor, maintains that there has been no contact to date between elements of the Special Forces Underground and elements of the militias, one of the observers quoted in the New York Times did note the similarity between their professed agendas. I would also note that apparently a past issue of the Resistor did contain an offer to train some of the militias. One of the best articles I have seen about the militias, a mixed bag and a group that I think has been misconceptualized by the political rhetoric, both its own political rhetoric and that from the so-called progressive sector, as well as the political rhetoric that has come from the government and the mainstream media. One of the very, very best articles on the militias, one which I think raises more questions than it answers, and that is properly so. That is a proper approach, in my opinion, to take vis-a-vis the militia, because I think there are more of the militias. I think it is a mixed bag, and there are many members of these organizations who are outright raving Nazis and fascists, and many of them who are sincere, albeit generally badly misinformed conservatives. This excellent article, one that we will be referencing in future segments, came from, of all publications, High Times magazine. That is a marijuana advocacy publication. Research credit on this goes to a listener. This article is from the High Times issue of November of 1995. The article is by Bill Weinberg, W-E-I-N-B-E-R-G. It's headlined, "The Militia Movement, Enemy or Pawn of the State?" And skipping down in this article, we read the following, referring to, first of all, the open scorn that Bill Clinton was met when he addressed the graduating class of West Point. Clinton is now the first and only president to have been jeered by the cadets when he addressed the graduation ceremonies at West Point. This kind of open alienation of military troops from their commander-in-chief is the necessary prerequisite for a classical coup d'etat of the sort which conventional wisdom maintains, quote, can't happen here, unquote. Note the use of the term conventional wisdom. I think it is happening here. Continuing. After the Oklahoma blast, a newsletter called The Resistor, the official publication of the Special Forces Underground, was discovered in the library at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, the Army base where Green Beret are trained and Tim McVeigh was posted. Tim McVeigh, of course, one of the accused in the Oklahoma City bombing. Continuing. Filled with bitter diatribes against Clinton and the Waco siege, The Resistor is apparently produced by active duty Green Beret. One recent issue included an open letter to the militia movement warning that an armed confrontation with the federal government would be premature. Quote, should the federal government decide to act against the militia groups and the militia groups stand and fight, they will not, in their current configuration, last 1 month, unquote, the issue read. It then went on to offer training in special operations for militias to prepare for the coming showdown. So there was apparently at least an offer to train militia groups for a coming confrontation with the federal government. That confrontation itself might serve to invoke the martial law contingency plans that are on the books. And again, I would note that in Germany and in Austria, extreme right-wing terror was indeed the excuse for calls for a crackdown by the, quote, strong state, unquote. I would also note that the soldiers who allegedly killed those black people in Fayetteville, North Carolina, We're, of course, from Fort Bragg, where the Special Forces Underground appears to be headquartered, or at least it's one of its central bases is. I would note a statement made by Jesse Helms on November 22, 1994, in which he stated that if Bill Clinton ever visited military bases in his home state, he'd have to have a bodyguard and or wear a bulletproof vest. A statement that, in my opinion, came very close to sedition. Note the open scorn for Bill Clinton in many military circles. I think that there may be many people with specialized knowledge and abilities who would participate in an active attempt to overthrow the government, and that in turn would almost certainly provoke the declaration of martial law. My own feeling is that the destabilization of American democracy at the moment bears, as I indicated, some comparisons with the overthrow of the Weimar Republic that I have documented in past archive shows, and some comparisons with the subversion of the French Republic prior to the German invasion in 1940 during World War II. Those archive shows are a form of radio documentary that I've put together over the years in which the printed sources upon which my lines of argument are based are excerpted on the air, literally read on the air, much as information has been in this segment, so that listeners can tape the programs and use the resulting tapes as an audio study resource. All of these archive shows are on permanent file. We're the Tape Duplication Service. More about that right now.
All of Dave Emery's archive shows are available from a tape duplication service named Archives on Audio. They can be contacted at P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, zip code 94117-0023. The phone number is 415-346-1840. Again, Archives on Audio can be reached at P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, 94117-0023. The phone number, 415-346-1840. There is also a catalog available which lists all of the archive shows, gives a synoptic description of each show, and cross-references the programs with other broadcasts containing similar or related material. The Archives on Audio catalog is available on the KFJC webpage, which is reached at http://www.cygnus.com/KFJC/Emery. Again, the website, all lowercase letters, is http://www.cygnus.com/KFJC/Emery. The website also has a suggested reading list and a list of other sources to pursue for more information on this field of research. Neither Dave Emery nor KFJC gets money from this arrangement.
KFJC is the home base station in the South San Francisco Bay Area at which I record these programs. That concludes this segment. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.